Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, I got a number, a figure that I was really surprised at. 80% of Wisconsin residents have not completed an advanced directive document. Our guests today are going to talk about why it's important to fill out those documents. And, of course, they'll be answering your questions as well as we move along. On the phone with me, a couple of guests, as I said, Benjamin Adams, one of them. He's an attorney with Adams and Woodrow in Neenah, Wisconsin, specializes in elder law, advanced care planning for health care decision making, looks at guardianship and alternatives to guardianship, nursing home and long-term care issues, and estate planning. And Ben Adams, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Larry. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and also with us, Ellen Koski, Executive Director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. And Ellen, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me here.
So, as you listen to these two experts talk, I hope you'll think about how your medical decisions will be made if you're not able to speak for yourself. Have advanced directive documents helped you? I'd love to hear some experiences along that line. And certainly, questions, give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And, of course, you can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Let's talk. I have an advanced directive. I got mine quite a while back. I think when I put my will together. But let's talk about what advanced directives are and who should have them. And Benjamin, you want to start with that?
Sure, Larry. Anybody who's 18 years old or older should think about getting an advanced directive where they, if possible, if they name someone, a friend or family member who, if the person became incapacitated and couldn't speak for themselves, they've named somebody who has legal standing to become their medical decision maker. So something that I think parents of high school and college age kids don't think about is once your children are 18, they're adults legally, and if something happened to their health, you're not their decision maker unless you go through the court process called guardianship to become a decision maker.
So it's for end-of-life decisions, but we don't know when the end of our life is going to happen, and it could happen at a very young age.
Well, that's one aspect of it, I guess. And I think, Larry, you've hit on the point that most people focus on, which is this becomes important only at end of life. But this is so that someone can legally make my decisions if I need health care and I can't speak about that. I want somebody who has authority but also knows my wishes and can direct my care to get me the care that makes sense. And then at end of life, perhaps there might be an issue about whether care is appropriate or not.
Yeah. Ellen Koski, why are 80% of Wisconsinites without some sort of advance directive?
Well, because it's really a difficult subject to be talking about, you know, and so what we cover is advanced care planning is really that process. So there's the document, and for many people, and as we know, most people, that's a huge barrier to actually put down in writing what our wishes may be should we be unable to speak for ourselves. But it really shouldn't be, you know, as Ben and you also said, you know, really naming that person who can speak from us. But the other aspect of it is the conversation. So really how we talk with our loved ones around what we would want is really important. But there's a lot of stigma around end of life in our communities and in our country, and nobody wants to really think about when and if this should happen. But unfortunately, it's going to happen to everybody.
Yeah. And you're executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership, and I thought that was a really interesting partnership. You should talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so folks in the Fox Valley have been working on end-of-life, improving end-of-life care and advanced care planning for almost 20 years. And a few years ago, our major healthcare systems came together and said, you know what, we need to really put this into our infrastructure. We need to make this a real thing in our community, I guess, and really put our weight behind it. So the Advanced Care Planning Partnership is a true collaboration between Ascension Northeast Wisconsin, Theta Care, Mosaic Family Health, and the Fox Valley community to make advanced care planning and conversations an integral part of living. So really what this is about life and honoring the types of medical care that people would want if they couldn't speak for themselves. And so that's naming that agent or that person who would speak for you if you couldn't speak for yourself, and then having those really important conversations with them, as well as your family and your support system, and then also your healthcare providers around the type of healthcare that you want. What's in concordance with your goals? What's important to you? Because everybody wants to honor you as a patient or you as a person. But the problem is, if we don't do this, we don't know what people want, and then we get the default. And most people, you know, many people don't want that.
Yeah. Ben Adams, is this a complicated process to put these documents into place?
It's very, it can be very simple, Larry, once you, I guess, overcome the inertia to find out what your local resources are to get this done. In many areas, there are existing resources often connected with health systems where if you just figure out who to touch base with, they can set you up with the necessary paperwork and with trained facilitators who can actually help you work through not just the paperwork, but what's important about future conversations.
Yeah, good points. You know, some good questions, I think, coming up. Dan in Reedsburg has one for us. Let's just go there. Dan, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Question for you. What do you do if your siblings don't want to do the directive, you don't really have the power to do anything about it?
Dan, are you talking about a different, you know, your situation where you'd like your siblings to make your decisions and they don't want to, or about another person in the family?
About another person.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess you're pointing out the importance of there have to be somebody willing to name an agent to be their decision maker. Once they do that, then when the decision maker's authority becomes effective, the decision maker can make decisions. Are you?
Is the one that's screwing it up.
Oh, I see. The person who was named is the one that does not now want to follow the directive.
Mm.
That is a tough one, Ben.
Yeah, that does come up, I think. One of the critical things is that when you have a family or a group of people, not everybody sees things the same way. So it's important, I think, in considering who should I appoint as my agent to look at the helpful qualities of a healthcare agent. Like, will they follow my wishes? Will they be able to stand up with their opinion if other people around me disagree with their decisions? Or are they just going to follow their own decision-making process? So that's a real difficult challenge, and I think if this process can be developed over time before the person who appointed their son or daughter or sibling as an agent loses capacity, then I think there's a better chance of some of these issues being sorted out.
Yeah. And you can see, you know, I'm thinking about this kind of in the abstract. You can talk to somebody and say, hey, you know, when I'm in that kind of situation, would you be willing to, make the decisions? Here's what I want. And, you know, that might be years, 5 years later before that happens, or 10 or whenever. And so now it's no longer abstract. It's a real thing. So I guess you need to be careful and you need to spend some time with that person.
I think that's true, Larry. If we can personalize this, you mentioned you have an advance directive that you did when you did other estate planning.
Yeah.
So then appropriately, you would have given copies of that to your health system and also to each of your agents.
Yeah.
And then you would be hopefully trying to have conversations in a more than surface level about your healthcare status and maybe some wishes at various points in time since you did that document. And most of us, frankly, if we even do the document, we put it in the file and that's the last time we think or talk about it for years.
Yeah, and it's good to have that on file, I guess, then with your physician.
Right, with your medical system is the one of the appropriate places to put it, but also each of your agents should have them. And I talk to people about this every week, and one of my questions is, well, if you did this, you know, where are the copies? Who has them? Who has access? And who are you talking to about it?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry for the issue that you're having here, Dan. I wish we could be of more help. I suppose there could be, as long as the other people have a copy of it, there should be some way to maybe override the person who's failing to make the decision, but maybe not.
Well, and you know, it's hard to know. Often there are two sides to each story, or more than two sides. So it's hard to know whether that person is really trying to make the decisions as they feel the person who appointed them wanted them to, or if they're going rogue, so to speak. There are proceedings that could be brought through the local court system, possibly in a guardianship setting, if this difficulty arises to that level.
Yeah.
So family members could certainly seek counsel, but you know, with just a little bit that Dan told us, it's hard to know kind of where things are in that family. Also, if the person is in medical treatment, there may be an ethics committee through the medical organization that could be convened to help the family members try to process this. Or another way to handle some of this, depending on it, is what's called elder mediation, which tries to reach family consensus and can be very effective.
Oh, yeah. Ellen, do you ever get involved in that sort of thing, or are your people?
So we're really, I mean, the healthcare systems that we're working with, we're working on improving the processes throughout the whole system. So that's not so much my area, but what I'm picking out from there is what, you know, ways that listeners can sort of learn from other situations. And that's really, you know, for a lot of the people that we work with, they've unfortunately been through a bad situation, and they don't want to put their family through that again. And so I think moving forward, you know, we really need to look at this as a process. And that naming that person is not the end, and completing the document is not the end. So naming that person and making sure that there's someone that you can trust and that they're willing to follow your wishes, even if they don't agree. And so we always talk with the folks that we're working with around, you know, to what extent, you know, do you as the patient want to take that? So are you going to give your agent the authority to sort of survey the situation and then go on what their gut says, or do you have certain things that you're not going to budge on and that you want someone who's going to honor you, you know, no matter what? And so really putting the work and the time into that ongoing conversation that is reviewed and updated as time goes by, because, you know, we get this document done and we never know what's going to happen tomorrow. None of us are guaranteed tomorrow. But, you know, but for the most of us, it's going to be quite a while, or we're going to have something that's chronic and ongoing that's eventually going to cause our demise. And so really continuing those conversations to help really take the black and white of that document and make it into the gray that is life, because it never really happens the way that, you know, the document is laid out. But it's that document that's going to give direction to the decision maker. And so really, you know, they name that person and then you give them the authority and your wishes, and they should be using that document to honor you, not honor themselves or what they would do, because that's a different situation.
Yeah. I'm talking today with Benjamin Adams, attorney with Adams and Woodrow in Neenah, Wisconsin. He specializes in elder law. Ellen Koski, executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnerships. Our guests, I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at planning ahead for healthcare decisions with our two guests, Ben Adams, attorney with Adams and Woodrow in Neenah, Wisconsin, specializing in elder law. Ellen Koski, executive director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Lots of callers online. I want to give Barbara in Wausau a chance to join us. Barbara, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm a registered nurse, and I serve as a parish nurse at our church here in Wausau. And one of the things that I would like to share about the advanced directives is that I can't emphasize enough, as much as your guest has, about the importance of not just filling out the paperwork and filing it, but actually having conversation with family members about the document, what you want, and who you want to be the agent, and whether they are willing to be the agent. It solves so many problems when it's actually time to implement the decision. And to say to people who are maybe in middle age, my age, that when your parents are trying to have this conversation with you about what they want, many of the older members of my congregation have said to me, my children don't want to talk about it. They say, oh, Mom, or oh, Dad, you're just fine. We don't need to talk about when you're going to die. And that's a great disservice to this person who's trying to implement a healthy document.
Yeah.
I agree. This is Ben. I certainly agree with everything that was just said. And not only that, I mean, I was smiling kind of in a rueful way and shaking my head as she was talking, because I've had clients in my office saying that, or I'll have the adult children in my office and they'll say, Mom and Dad won't talk about this with me. And I guess the other element I'd point out is that very often the person goes in to see their medical advisor, their family physician, who tells you, you don't have to worry about that now, it's a long time off. and that, I think, is changing, but that's been one of the big handicaps with health systems, and something that we, at least in the Fox Valley, and I think other systems around the state, have begun to work seriously on.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Barbara, thank you so much for that call.
Yeah.
Carolyn in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Larry. This is Carol. You know, Larry, I just want to say real quick that, you know, the last time I talked to you was about 5 years ago, and I had just been diagnosed with my MS at the time. And it was a really nice phone call with you. And at the end you said, you know, Carol, thank you, and good for your, you know, really positive attitude. Then said, now that's somebody we'd all like to know, and I want you to know that made my day, and I never forgot it.
Oh.
So since I was diagnosed with my MS, that I started working as a caregiver, and here's the thing. I learned from working with hospice teams and then also having, EMTs come in for some of these people, is that the first place they look is the top of the fridge. And that's where they look for all of your things. And so if you have a do not resuscitate order, that's the place they're going to go for. So I think that's kind of something good to know.
Oh.
And, yeah, and from my doctor, and this is all, I'll cut it short after this, but from my doctor gave me a booklet called Five Wishes, and that's what hospice teams work with. And that's all about your wishes, about what would happen if you end up in an end-of-life situation. And he gave it to me when I was in my 40s, so of course I about freaked out. But I have that filled out, and I've told everybody what I want. It's pretty hard to watch.
Yeah.
When someone has a living will, and it means that they're going without food or water at the end. Yeah. But if that's what people want, that's what people want. That's all I have.
Oh, Carolyn, you know what? It's good to hear your voice again. It's been 5 years. Thanks so much for that call. It meant a lot to me, too. Ellen, a comment from you about Carolyn? Carol?
Yeah, well, it's great to hear you, Carolyn. And a couple things stood out. You know, we always, you know, when was the last time you took a look at your document? I know you say you talk about it quite a bit, but also, you know, pose that question to the people that you're talking to. So if you're comfortable with this, ask others what are their wishes. You know, I mean, we're all in this together, and so we need to be really drawing it out from people. And from my experience, when people are given the permission to talk about this and think about it, I've been teaching a class for the University of Minnesota with undergraduate students for many years, and they said, I've never, you know, I just haven't had the permission to talk about it or think about it. People want to talk about it, and they want you to know their wishes, and they want you to know what they would want at that point in their life. But with that, that changes. So as we get older, making sure to go back to your document and back to those people that you've had those conversations with and let them know how your wishes have changed and how they've morphed with where you're at in your life cycle and where you're at in your with your family and what's going on with your health. And so, but so great to hear from you, Carol, and thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been bless your heart for volunteering and doing the kind of work that you are doing and making more people aware of the need to do this planning.
Yeah.
She also mentioned Five Wishes, which is one of the guides that's available. There are numerous really nice advanced care planning guides that are out there, Larry. As a matter of fact, I think maybe you have an article showing one of those guides on your Facebook page today.
Yeah, actually on our website page. And let me tell you how to get to that. If you go to wpr.org/Larry, you'll go right to the site, to my site. And then just look on the program notes under Planning Ahead for Healthcare Decisions. It's the end of life planning article along with the forms as well, I believe.
Right. Yeah, that's a guide that was put out initially many years ago by a collaboration among the State Bar Association, which is the lawyers, the State Hospitals Association, and the State Medical Society. And that booklet, which is very helpful, is now in its eighth printing. And it's available through the State Bar, and you can access it through that article from now until, I think, it's April 21st. And people can download and print the booklet and then use it with themselves and their family members.
Yeah. Carol, thanks again. I appreciate your call very much. I want to give some others a chance to join in. Cheryl in Berlin, I believe, is up next. Let's see if I can get to Cheryl. There you are. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I wanted to know if the wills and power of attorney forms that you print online, are those legal? Would they hold up?
I guess I better answer that one, Larry.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Since I'm the lawyer on the line. It depends on how you complete them. I mean, they can all be made legal. The question is, are they actually going to accomplish what you are trying to accomplish? And I guess I don't really want to go into the area of wills that kind of thing, because that's a subject for another day, maybe, Larry.
Yeah.
But in terms of online documents that you can complete for healthcare decision making, there are numerous specific documents that you can use if completed correctly. If they're all Wisconsin based, they're all going to work. But as Ellen has been saying, and I have too, the real trick is to not only have a legal document that authorizes an agent, but then to have had those continuing and changing conversations with the agent so they really can reflect your values when future decisions need to get made.
And isn't it true that this can vary a little bit, the forms and so forth, from state to state?
This is one of those areas that is absolutely different from one state to the next. As a matter of fact, I've got in front of me an article from the American Bar Association Commission on Law and Aging, which refers to Wisconsin as one of the states among what they call the Forbidding Five, which means that our legal healthcare power of attorney documents require a lot more specific language than most states do. So you really have to have a Wisconsin document. There's more than one, and then you have to complete it correctly.
Yeah.
So there's, in my opinion, Larry, as a lawyer, way too much focus on the legality of the document, and it should be on the conversation. But we have to have a valid document for your agent to be able to act for you.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. My quick question and dilemma is that I am the POA of my brother. He's nonverbal at this point. And so I've sent copies of this POA, and it's been notarized and everything, and this kind of segues or is similar to the previous call as far as the legality of this. So, of these documents. So, one company that I'm finding trouble dealing with, accessing some of my brother's finances. He has an HSA account, and so he needs this money for his medical needs now, and they're telling me that this document isn't valid, that it doesn't serve its what I thought its purpose would be. Do I need to seek legal counsel, do you think? Or
I'll take this one, too, if that's
sure,
all right.
You bet.
It sounds like you're talking about a financial, or often called a durable power of attorney, which is allowing you to handle financial and legal matters, not just the medical power, the healthcare power of attorney, which is a separate document. And depending on what the language in that document authorizes you to do, the company that you're dealing with may be, they may be correct in what they're telling you, or they may be incorrect. The state bar does, though, have a free legal consultation service, and you could look on the state bar's website, and you can call in, and the paralegals will ask you enough questions to route you to an attorney qualified in the area that you need advice on, and you can have either a free or a very low-cost 20-minute or so conversation with somebody who could really give you the correct answer to that. That's called the Lawyer Information Referral Service, and you can access it through the State Bar's website.
Excellent.
Okay. I did see, and these were state forms, and I had them printed out, filled out, notarized, and I did seek an elder care attorney, and he seemed to feel that they were fine, similar to what some of the other people were saying or what you guys have been saying, that maybe it should have been a little more thorough or whatever, but I'm just not quite fully understanding what they had asked for this information, so I sent it to them, and they're saying it's not valid or something.
Well, and I, you know, you're kind of off topic for the healthcare topic for today, but nonetheless, I do run into numerous situations where a perfectly valid document is being questioned by a financial institution, and they're not always right. And sometimes it's a matter of going back to the lawyer that you consulted and hiring them to deal directly with that company for you, if that's necessary.
Yeah, that may be the that may be what you need, Bill. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. Louise in Chautauqua, it's your turn. Hi, Louise.
Hi. What I'd like to bring up is I'm a home funeral guide, and when I go out and talk at groups, what I tell them is to get their paperwork filled out, just like you're stating. But the one that most people don't talk about is authorization for final disposition of my body. That's a Wisconsin one. And what I find is if a couple's living together and not married, it may be that his or her family doesn't like to live in and won't let them come to the funeral or plan the funeral. Or two of the children say, oh, Mom wanted to be cremated, and the other one says, nope, she wanted to be buried. I have a friend who's a medical examiner, and she has had to wait to sign off on the cremation because the family can't agree. My own brother had a roommate, and he asked me to help when the roommate died. He didn't fill out his paperwork. It took me a week because the hospital was very upset because I couldn't get the body taken because a funeral home wouldn't take it for the money he had. And they couldn't cremate the body because no one could sign for him to be cremated because there wasn't a family member, which means that in Wisconsin, it has to be full body burial. And no funeral home would do it for Medicaid pricing. So this form, I wished hospitals and social workers would push as much as they do the power of attorney for health care.
Yeah, I think those are very valid points, and what happens to somebody's remains after they die can be a subject for serious discussion and sometimes contention after somebody dies. So that document, the authorization for final disposition, is the way to handle that in advance. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. And what I've found too is sometimes with people, and when we're talking with families, or you're, if you know your listeners are are thinking about how to get this started, I found that people are very comfortable talking about what's going to happen after they die. So that is another great in. If you're trying to get some information or get this paperwork taken care of with your family members and loved ones, that might be a great starting point, and then to work backwards. And so what are your funeral plans? Let's make sure all the documents are in order. What would you want? People just seem to be more comfortable talking about that. And then let's start talking about, okay, so let's say you're still alive, but you can't communicate. What kind of health care would you want and not want?
Yeah, very good points. Louise, thank you for calling. Maddie from De Pere called to ask how advanced directives work with emergency personnel. She was told that unless you are terminal, they will resuscitate.
That's a great point and a good question and a little bit of a variation of what we've been talking about so far. But a healthcare power of attorney, Larry, if I appoint you as my agent and I go out to get the mail and my neighbor notices that I'm laying by the mailbox and calls 911, nothing in that legal document will prevent the paramedics from resuscitating me. The only way to prevent CPR or a resuscitation would be if I had seen my doctor and requested a do not resuscitate or DNR order, and if I had that on my wrist as a bracelet at the time I stopped breathing. Mm-hmm. So that's another very specific question that's in addition to an advance directive.
Yeah. Let's go to Karen in Belgium next. Hi, Karen. Thank you for calling.
Hi. So I'm my mother's POA, financial and medical. But I'm wondering if I have to go further than a POA medical. I've had some problems with other family members. My mother's 92. In taking her out of the group home she's in, and then, you know, she's just not up for it, but they insist that they want to do that, and I've tried to reason with them as far as her fragility and things like that, and they just say, no, we're taking her. And it's ended up where she's ended up in the hospital, you know, for a month because I couldn't stop them from doing it, and she, you know, wasn't given the medication, you know, wasn't given, you know, they took her for a few days, all that kind of stuff. Do I need to get a guardianship in order to prevent this, or is, as the POA medical person, can I prevent this?
Ben, that's probably one for you.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is too, Larry. It's a challenging situation, and you don't, as the agent, have the right to simply bar others from doing things that your mother may want and may agree to do. The area of what you can do and what you can't do can really, I think, often end up in a guardianship situation where you might need to go that direction. And even guardians may not be able to simply pick and choose what's allowed. There has to be good, valid reasons for why, you know, I've seen situations where people even need to get restraining orders to prevent somebody from doing a certain thing. So that can be awfully challenging. One good resource for information about guardianships and those kinds of things would be the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources, or GWAAR, and they have a wonderful website and a guardianship support center there. They're a nonprofit law firm that advises on older adults issues. So that's maybe one place. Another aspect of this that I think might be helpful would be to do a search for elder mediation in Wisconsin and see if there wasn't a possible elder mediation opportunity in the area where your mother lives, because in Winnebago County we have an a mediation service that does elder mediation, and they tell me their track record is phenomenal at getting families to find more consensus about what's most important and best for a parent or a family member.
Oh, interesting. Thank you, Karen. I appreciate your call. And Mary in West Allis, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. My first question is, how valid are the wills or any kind of document from LegalZoom.com? And then my second question is, as the estate trustee for my parents' trust, there is a small piece of property in northern Wisconsin that my brother and I are responsible for. What happens when I die? Does that ownership always stay in trust, or does that go to my only child?
Well, we're getting off the straying away from the topic here, Ben. But
well, I'll take a crack at it. Whether those pre-formatted or online documents will turn out to be sufficient and valid is a case by case question. So it's a matter of what document is actually completed, and then what authority does it grant. So that's all I can tell you, is that it may be perfect, but it may also have some big deficits in it. And then the question about what happens when the trustee dies, if you, it sounds like you and your brother are trustees, if a trustee dies, the document says in its plain language what happens, whether the other trustee continues, and in a trust arrangement, the trustee is the manager, but eventually the assets of the trust go to somebody called the beneficiary, so you'd have to look at what happens for beneficiary there. But yeah, that's outside of our, that's a subject for yet another topic.
Yeah, well, there's lots of topics here that we're uncovering as we move along. Thanks, Mary, for calling. Amanda emailed to say that her dad passed away unexpectedly in 2016, and she and her mom had a really hard time making all those decisions in hopes they were what her dad wanted. Now her mother has everything planned out. She says she can't stress enough the importance of having these conversations. And Ellen, you're going to agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, we can't change the situation. So, you know, like we said, tomorrow is not guaranteed for anybody. But what everyone wants to do is honor our loved ones, and we want to make sure that we're making the decisions for them that they would want to make for themselves, and that we're truly speaking for them. And, you know, there's always the coulda, shoulda, wouldas. We should have talked about this. We should have done that. Well, I suggest using media, using current events as great opportunities to say, you know, what would you do in that situation? Or remember how, you know, cousin so-and-so passed away. What would you have wanted there? And really, you know, do what you can to start those conversations and to have them often, because we never know what could happen.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. We learned a lot, and I want to go back and just mention that the article relating to this, if you go to our WPR.org/Larry website, and then just under program notes, just below my picture, you can find Planning Ahead for Healthcare Decisions. You'll get a link, end-of-life planning article. You'll get a link also to the forms that you need to follow here in the state of Wisconsin. And Ben, as you were saying, they're also available on the State Bar website, are they not?
Right. And people can also do an internet search, Larry, for the terms advanced care planning or advanced directives and put in their city location, and I bet they come up with good resources through their local health systems to get this planning done at no cost to them.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a suggestion that I have, is to reach out to your health system in your community, and there's a lot of resources available in terms of folks that are willing to sit down and have a conversation with you, or different classes that they may be offering. This is really taking off in our state, and we're really building up the resources to help people through this, because we know it's not easy, but we're all in it together. So.
Ellen, Ben, thank you both so much. I hope we have a chance to do this again with you. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for being with us today. And just so you know, Ben Adams is an attorney with Adams and Woodrow in Neenah, Wisconsin. He specializes in elder law, advanced care planning for healthcare decision-making, guardianship, and alternatives to guardianship, nursing home and lawn care issues, and estate planning. So great to have him along. Ellen Kosky, Executive Director of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Our guests here on the Ideas Network. And coming up, we're going to switch gears with you a bit today and talk about the American dream. What does the American dream mean these days with our next guest, an author of an interesting book? It's called Lawn Boy, and it's written by Jonathan Evison, our next guest here on the Ideas Network.